Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual scooter, bike or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe so that you never miss an episode on YouTube, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Right, Prats, I'm looking forward to this episode. We have got a proper country gent, a lovely man who is a must follow on social media for his bike content, product reviews. His passions include travel, as I said, bikes, cars, beautiful places, beautiful coffee, beautiful people, interesting people, which worries me because he's going to spend the next 45 minutes or so talking to us. And I'm going to put it out there. He could possibly be one of the most stylish, well-spoken guests we've had yet. It is, of course, Freddie Dobbs.
I love that intro. Thank you so much. You've made my day with that.
Freddie, it's a pleasure to have you on. On a personal note, given what I've seen on YouTube, given what I've seen on your Instagram, I mean, I've been to Morocco with you. I've been to Motorcycle Live with you. I've been sat in the cockpit listening to you talk about the review of a Harley Road King. All of this, mate, seeing the wonderful clothes, the fashion that goes with that beautiful love of motorcycles. And what has been very, very evident, and when you go looking through what you put up, what the reaction is to your content, the cinematic side to it, my friend, is an absolute joy to behold. These things are a work of art. That is something. Does that come naturally? Is that something that's taken a lot of hard work to look so effortlessly stylish?
Really appreciate it. I love the, with regards to biking, I love the style side as much as the motorbikes. For me, it's almost 50-50. You pick your dream motorbike, but then the outfits and the style is equally as exciting as the motorbike. So I love everything to do with it. And the style of motorbikes, unlike with cars, it's such an important thing. Like what you wear on a motorbike is equally as important as the motorbike. I know there'll be a lot of people like, Freddie, don't be so pathetic. Just get on the bike ride. No. For me, the style is so important. And whether people like to admit it or not, you look back at the films like that, Marlon Brando, the wild one back in the 1950s. Yeah. Imagine that in, for example, an all-out adventure suit with Gore-Tex and textiles. Now, you've got to have the leather jacket. You've got to have the style with it. It's important for me, and I get really excited about it. It's not that I'm trying to push people to, like, you have to wear this, you have to wear that. Mm. Just for me, I just love it. It really excites me.
Bearing that in mind then, has there ever been a bike that you've been, you know, offered a loan of and you've looked at it and gone, oh no, I couldn't be seen on that. Or what on earth will I wear on that? I mean, have you ever been outstyled by a bike? Has ever a bike intimidated your wardrobe?
No, but it's a good question with regards to the type of bike. I don't usually do all out adventure bikes. And I remember I tested a Ducati Multistrada because I wanted to see if I could be really enthused by a bike that's completely out of my comfort zone. And it just didn't end up being exactly my kind of bike in the end. So I did try it. And I understand, for example, that hardcore, all-out, big-capacity adventure bikes are excellent bikes. But for me, biking is all about passion and what connects with you on an emotive level. So for me, what connects me on an emotive level is something that looks amazing, gets my heart racing, and that's the beautifully designed machines, the modern classics, Harley-Davidsons, things like that. Mm.
That journey, that love and real kind of, there's a real nourishment to what you do, Freddie, with regards to what you invest your time and your own money and your own interests in. I mean, the Bonnie that's been on this journey, that's been ridden and rebuilt.
Can you see it?
And fit, gorgeous. And with the panniers, I mean, I got exactly the same panniers after a review that I saw of your panniers. We won't mention those right now because I'm not getting anything free from just yet. But it was exactly that style of what you wanted for that particular bike. And I think even the people that you've worked with that have evidently met through socials and really given that bike a new lease of life, it's that investment in quality and the investment in what these machines and these articles and these items of clothing stand for you, isn't it?
100%. I always feel with a motorbike, it's the deep personal emotive attachment. Like this Bonneville now is probably worth about, I would say, £2,000 maximum. But for me, it's worth more than when I bought it for £3,650. I could never sell it. Yeah. Like I'll test out a brand new Triumph and I think, yeah, that's an excellent bike. And I know it's better than my Bonneville, but I don't care because I've got all of the memories with my Bonneville. Now, this for me is like, it's just unthinkable to get rid of it because it's so much more special because it's earned my love. And I love that about it.
It's personal. We say it before, don't we, Prats? You know, you and your bike will go, I don't mean this literally, but you'll go on that journey and it will have broken down. It will have let you down and you swear on it and then you love your bike. And it's just so personal. As you said, that bike is priceless to you because it's your bike. And where did that journey start for you, though? Because we speak to a lot of people and they always say, yeah, my dad was into bikes or my uncle, my auntie used to ride bikes. Was it passed down to you? Was it something from a young age you knew you wanted to be on two wheels or did it come later in life?
No. I grew up in the Fast and the Furious era. So I grew up, it was all about cars. You pass your test and immediately you want to be Vin Diesel. So you're buying the best car you can. I bought a Vauxhall Nova and you go to the cinema, you watch Fast and the Furious and we're street racing all over the place. We're buying like Lexus rear lights for the cars and anything that you can buy, the cheapest garbage possible, but you're just out on the streets just racing around all the time. No one was biking when I was younger. It was all about max power, Fast and the Furious, that type of stuff. And then I remember one day I was going to work. I was about 24 in a job I hated. I was in recruitment. I finished university. And this was a miserable job for me. Office job, cold calling, picking up. Do you want this job? Do you want this job? And I remember thinking, God, I'm turning into a vegetable. I'm going to work at a job I despise, in a commute on the train that I hate. I need some joy. I need something here because I can't stay at this job too much longer because I am now just a mindless vegetable. And I thought, God, I think I love biking, but I don't know why because I've always loved cars. But suddenly I was just going to work, getting off the train. And I had a revelation. I was like, I think motorbiking is the most amazing thing and I have no idea about it. So I booked my direct access. And I passed second time because I just felt like I needed some excitement in my life. I needed something that every day I could get excited about. Like there had to be an outlet of joy. You can't just be a mindless vegetable doing something you hate. And I passed my test and I bought a Honda CB F500, the most basic entry level commuter bike, because I didn't understand anything about biking. None of my friends, none of my family rode. And I didn't know what a cool bike was. So I went out, I got this massive Gore-Tex oversuit because I didn't know what do bikers wear. I don't know. And I didn't know what a cool bike was. So I bought this bike and all this weird Gore-Tex stuff. I passed in the summer. I put this Gore-Tex stuff over my normal clothes and I was riding around losing about 2 liters of sweat an hour because I was sweltering and I stank everywhere I went. And I thought, I don't like these clothes and I don't even like the bike, but I know there's some magic there. And I ended up selling the bike 4 weeks later for an £800 loss. So that was a 1.8K bike, sold for 1,000. And then I thought, I'm a sports bike rider. That's what I am. I must be a sports bike rider. But I couldn't afford a sports bike. So I bought an appalling looking Suzuki RF600 for £800. Had that for a while, realized I hated that. And then I bought a Super Naked. I went all out, £4,000 Super Naked Triumph. And I took that to Croatia and places like that. And I liked it, but it never 100% clicked. I was still on the journey trying to figure out what kind of biker am I? And I had a business at the time, basically went bankrupt, had to sell that, bought a useless £800 Suzuki Bandit just to replace it with so I had something. And then after the Bandit, the business I had went bust. I ended up being an Ocado delivery driver for a year. And again, I needed an outlet. I thought I need some form of joy. And that is where this all comes over to. I saw on the classifieds a Triumph Bonneville, £3,650. And I thought to myself, I'm going for 130 horsepower, Super Naked, like proper hardcore bike. This was called the Daddy on the Triumph website when it came out. This is the ultimate beast of the day. Like it was sub-zero cool, this bike, insanely cool. And I thought, I'm not a real biker. If I sell this 130 horsepower bike and I move to a 65 horsepower bike, that's it. My biking days are over. I'm like a granddad. What am I? And it took me a year of deliberating. Like, can I halve the horsepower and still class myself as a proper biker? It sounds crazy now, but that's how I thought back. And I took out a loan of £3,650 and I bought this Bonneville. And I went up north to get it. Well, I was still an Ocado delivery driver, like on minimum wage. So this was all loan money. And I sat on it for the first time. And I thought, yes, yes, it's the first bike I have ever sat on where it just clicked. And I was like, this is me. Like, it's all finally fallen into place. This is the kind of biker I am. And everything felt glorious. And I've never even considered selling it. I love this bike so much. It's me bang on for biking. And I feel like once I found my little area, I can never go back. Like, I love it so much now. It's a love story that's been 6 years.
The way you describe it as well, Freddie, it's just amazing. I mean, and given that, what you've just given us there, the kind of potted history of what got you from not being in this industry to being very much at the forefront of it. I love the way you went into it with a completely open mind, a completely open set of eyes and a big heart to kind of go, do you know what, I'll start from scratch here as an adult and work out just where the hell I fit into this biking kind of fraternity. You've done that. You then get to the point where you work through different businesses and doing different jobs. And now I'm not necessarily saying that it's just the beginning of what is the big, big journey for you. But you look at the content, you look at what you're talking about, you look at the brands that you're working with, you look at ostensibly what your job, what your career is now. That's not been without its pitfalls or tremendous amount of hard work, has it? I bet people just watch on YouTube and go, oh, look at Freddie, he's got the best job in the world. You've earned your spurs there to be able to enjoy that best job in the world.
When we started it, so I finished university. I got a job in recruitment, like everyone at that point, just need a job recruitment. Everyone's a recruiter. I was useless at it. I hated it so much. And I was in a recruitment job I despised. And I knew I was about to be fired because I was the worst performing recruiter. I was so bad. I thought, I need to do something here. So I was fired. And then I thought, look, if I can just get a couple of deals a year, I could potentially survive. So I quickly set up a recruitment company. I called up a random gambling company in Gibraltar. And I said, I'll be in Gibraltar next week. I was a cleaner at this point because I'd lost my job. And I said, I'll be in Gibraltar next week. Can I pop in to meet you? Because I'm meeting one of your competitors an hour before you, and I'll be there on Tuesday. And I thought, no one will come back to me because I was a cleaner. I had no plans to go to Gibraltar. And then William Hill, a gambling company, they said, yeah, Freddie, we're free at 10 a.m. I was like, oh my God, I'm off to Gibraltar. So I headed off to Gibraltar, and that was the start of a recruitment company I had for 9 years. I ended up having an office in Richmond with 5 people. That all went bust, and then the roller coaster of 9 years. And then it finally went bust when I was about 34 or 33. So I had to get a job as an Ocado delivery driver for a year. And while I was an Ocado delivery driver, I thought, I'm an excellent businessman. Monica, my partner, said, leave it to me. Just let me figure out a new business. It's fine. It's fine. And I spent a year there like a vegetable. I didn't come up with one business idea. And it got to a point where I was like, right, so that's fine. I'm just an Ocado delivery driver. I'm not a businessman because I can't think of anything. And Monica then thought, right, this is crazy. You're doing nothing. I'm going to start posting some pictures on Instagram of you and your Bonneville, which luckily I'd bought. This is all thanks to the Bonneville, everything, seriously, because it's so photogenic. And Monica was posting pictures of me on Instagram of the Bonneville. And I was furious at first because I'm kind of in a way shy because I thought, no, Monica, my friends are going to bully me if I start doing these poses with a Bonneville. Please don't post anything. And she did it anyway, because again, I keep saying it, I was like a vegetable. And that went quite well. But then we thought, is there a way we could monetize this? And we couldn't figure a way out for Instagram at all. So at this point, I'd left Ocado and we were working as Amazon delivery drivers, just delivering, you know, Amazon Flex type stuff during COVID. So we spent the whole of COVID doing Amazon Flex. And during that time, we were doing some Instagram posts and stuff like that. And we thought, should we try YouTube? And Monica said, why don't you just make a video? Because you're getting a few bikes now on Instagram, like an Indian Scout, Harley Davidson, Triumph. I said, Monica, I can't talk on YouTube. It's too embarrassing. And she said, look, do you want to talk on YouTube or do you want to go back to Ocado? It's up to you. So I thought, okay, right, fine. I'll try and talk. And it took me, we had an Indian Scout at the time for Instagram. Thought, let's try and film on YouTube. It took me 30 attempts just to say, hello, I'm Freddie, and this is an Indian scout. And it was like 30 painful attempts like that, just to say the intro. And it started like that. And we were lucky because this is such a popular bike, the Indian Scout. Sub-Zero cool. Everyone loves it. And that got good views, not because of me, but just because we were lucky that we started it with an Indian Scout. So we got lucky in that respect.
It sounds to me like it's not luck in terms of you've worked hard in life, like Prat said, but you've got your Bonneville, which you love, and your partner, who's obviously very supportive and pushed you in the right direction. Do you sometimes pinch yourself now then to think, you know, I was in a dead-end recruitment job I didn't enjoy, then I became a delivery driver, with all due respect, I didn't enjoy, and now you're making content on bikes you love and people will love watching you. Do you pinch yourself?
I feel like I've won the lottery. The feeling is even more incredible than I thought it could be. I know a lot of people look at YouTubers, and a lot of the time, you know, you could say, is it really that good? Come on, can't be that good. It must be so much hard work to get there and do that. But for one, it is that good. It's like a dream. I get to wake up every day and act like a child and think, right, I want to test this motorbike. I can test this motorbike. I want to head off here and there to this country. I want to try and get to, where was it? To Sardinia. For £200. And I'm like, Monica, I'm heading off in a week's time, by the way. I'm going to Sardinia. It's business, please, please. And I get to pretend that all this stuff is business. It's like a dream. I can't believe how lucky I am. Every day I wake up and I would dream to do stuff like this. I would do it for free if it were physically possible. The fact I can do it and it's business, honestly, it's amazing. It's not work. It's not difficult. Hard is commuting an hour a day to work, to a job you hate. That's hard. YouTubing, filming motorbikes and travel, that's not difficult at all. It's easy. It's amazing. It's a joy. I'm so over the moon that I can do it every day. Like, there's nothing difficult about living your dream at all.
I mean, it's such an amazing way to put it, Fred. And it really does sum you up, that positivity, the energy that you put into what you do. That's why you look at the growth of what you put out there. And as you say, going from that fella that was taking an age to get stuff up and running with the wonderful help of Monica. She's a wonderful feature of all the work that you do as well, isn't she? It's a real team effort.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly, Monica's incredibly camera shy, but she does everything. So she does all of the editing and all of that. This all started because of Monica. Now I've got overexcited about it and I love it, and I end up filming most of it. But Monica is the one who behind the scenes is doing all of this stuff, like all our Libertatia brand with our, yes, our books and tool rolls and t-shirt. Monica actually started all of that stuff as well. She's like the master behind it. And I'm just a person on front of camera, in essence. The video ideas are all me, but Monica behind the scenes is doing more of the kind of high level stuff like that.
And the ideas that just come pouring out of you, the one that just jogged my memory was getting through France and staying away from motorways and payage and, you know, going on the old kind of D roads and N roads, which are just the most beautiful straight roads. And you just see countryside, village. And it's a glorious way of seeing France, isn't it? And the places that you just pitched up and thought, do you know what? These are the digs for tonight. Tent down, chuck the stuff in and get cracking.
And you know, this is the magic of wild camping. This is what I discovered when I went to Barcelona like 2.5 years ago. I went to see my friends at a festival at Primavera in Barcelona. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to wild camp all the way to Barcelona. Because I'm sure you know what it's like. If you're on a big road trip or something like that, and you pack up and you're spending £100 a night on a hotel, after about 8 nights, you're like, oh my God, I've spent £1,300. This is getting really expensive now. But you put a tent on the back of your motorbike, you're like, I can carry on forever because I'm literally just sleeping in a random wood. And all I'm spending is maybe £18 a day on fuel. I have to eat, but everyone has to eat. So that's not an additional cost. Wild camping just means that you can travel almost indefinitely. It means you never have to worry about finances. And that's so magic. It also means that you're not stopping at lunchtime thinking, bugger, I need to find a hotel to stay in now. Yeah. Where do I think I'm going to get to? Maybe I'll get to here. But sometimes you want to carry on further. So wild camping means you ride until you want to. you see somewhere on the side of the road and you just set up there, you put on YouTube or Netflix or something like that while cooking away on your little stove, you're in heaven. Yeah. It's amazing.
You certainly do it the right way. Prat said earlier about the quality of your work, though, the films you put out, that they are absolutely beautiful. You're in a position now, because of your great content, I've no doubt manufacturers trip over themselves to lend you bikes. What I was interested to ask is, what happens though if you get a loan bike, and let's just say you're not in love with it at the end of it, and you have to say that on your videos? How does that then become, or does it become fraught, the relationship with the press officer, when you give a bite back and sort of say, oh yeah, by the way, this YouTube review is going to go up next week. I wouldn't watch it if I was you. Do you worry about being honest?
No, I don't. It's a really good question, but I don't. I like to think, it's not for me to say other people can think if I'm honest or not, but I like to think I'm quite honest with the bikes that I get to test. I had a pretty bad one actually recently, where I tested an electric bike. And I went to pick it up from a really nice dealership called Paulson Creative in Essex. And the owner of Paulson said, Freddie, I'd love you to test this bike out because we're considering stocking it. And the representative of Ultraviolet, the electric bike company, he's a lovely guy, really, really nice guy. And he said, Freddie, thank you for showcasing this bike before the video. And I said, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for letting me test it. And I felt bad because during the video, look, I didn't like the bike. I didn't get it. And there's always that bad personal feeling. The guy representing the company has come all the way to give me a bike. So nice of him to give me the bike to test. And I don't like the bike. And you kind of have that dilemma, like, yeah, this isn't the nicest thing to do, you know, saying bad stuff about a bike. But if I don't do it, people are going to call me a liar. Yeah. You know, so you have to just be honest. But I agree, it's not a nice thing.
Or even worse, someone would buy a bike off the back of your review and then message you and go, you told me this was in the video, you praised it, and this is rubbish. So it's part of your job. And I suppose it's not a negative, it's just a side of it which is uncomfortable if you have to tell the truth.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. So it happens. Actually, to be fair, the biking companies are fine. Like they never have an issue with bad feedback or something like that. It's fairly impersonal. They give you a bike, that's it, it's done. Mm-hmm. And I've never had a biking company come back and say, Freddie, you weren't fair about that review or something like that. They're such big organizations, it's done. Whereas if I work with a small company on a collaboration or something, I have had a couple of smaller companies where I've done a collab or something like that. And they say, Freddie, you weren't complimentary enough about the product. Because it's a smaller company, they take it more personally. That's the thing. So I have got in trouble a couple of times for that type of stuff. But the bike brands are so big, it's impersonal.
Yeah. I think as well, because you're doing such a charming way, that's even if you're delivering a slightly less than favourable review, it's that big smile that makes it, I think, it all smoothed over. Let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Now, something that's very close to you and Thomas's heart as well is these things that have got four wheels, cars or something. But and that's something that always floats your boat, Freddie, doesn't it? That kind of bespoke nature of beautifully made cars as well.
I'm equally as much a car fan as motorbike fan. I love cars. I've always loved cars ever since I was about 8 years old. I was the only one of my siblings, there were three of us, who loved cars. I remember as a child, 5 years old, I'd be like, Vauxhall Nova, Ford Fiesta, Ford Granada, every single model I could point out. Like, I just always had something about vehicles. And even now, I mean, I've probably owned 23 cars in my life. So, I mean, I used to go through them. Street racing takes its toll on cars, believe me. So I would get through cars so quickly. It's insane. But my best ones of note, I had a 4.2 litre Jaguar XK. And God, I loved that car so much. I took it to Lithuania, all over the place. And now I've got a Jeep Wrangler, and I'm halfway through attaching I've put a new tow bar on. Then there's going to be a bike ramp that just clicks into the back of it. And I'm going to buy an old 1990s Japanese dirt bike that just rides onto the back. So no trailer, just the dirt bike on the back of it. And that means that every time we go away, like overlanding, if we go to Turkey or Greece in the future, chuck on the dirt bike to the back. And you've got everything you need there. That's a dream.
Me and you, we like that, honestly. I love the fact
look
that...
Look, a big smile on his face.
I asked you earlier about the bikes. You know, do you ever look at a bike and you said, you know, it's not just about the rideability. It's got to be cool as well. You're obviously like that with your cars as well. I can't see you owning, you know, a car that doesn't suit your personality, because you're very flamboyant. You're very out there. And I mean that with love, you know. And like you say, a Jeep Wrangler with a bike on the back, it's just cool. It just seems to me you just love being cool. I love that. That sounds like I'm being really fanboying you, but what I'm trying to get at is you would not own a car that isn't cool, would you? Or a bike?
No, I wouldn't, because for me, it's emotion. Like, I think common sense is overrated. It's almost like we're pre-programmed to think, just, you got to be sensible. There's got to be common sense there. Come on, don't do that. That's not sensible. Have you thought about future depreciation? Have you thought about how you're going to pay into your pension? All of this stuff, we are programmed in from school. I sound like a conspiracy theorist. Make sure you pay into your pension. Have you got your life assurance? Have you saved 22.5% on that deal or that deal? It's too boring. We're here for a good time. We need to follow our heart and buy the stuff that we feel something about. We don't know if we're going to die next week. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be on my deathbed and think, yes, you know what? I did that. I don't want to be on my deathbed and think, well done, Fred. That pension fund is really strong there. You did a good job with that. There's no point being the richest corpse in the graveyard. So I'm going to go out there and spend all my money and buy the vehicles that I love. And the vehicles that right now, and as a child, I thought, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And that's how I like to live my life every day. Just enjoy every penny and do everything the way I dream I would. If I just imagine I'm on my deathbed, I look back, would I be proud of myself? And the only way for me personally, everyone's different, I'd be proud of myself, live life to the limit and get everything I want to do and do everything I want to do. And I love living like that. I save nothing. I spend every penny I've got. I'm useless with finances. I don't care though.
I mean, it, as a manifesto for life, Freddie, it's one that just rings so true on so many levels and really does befit what biking and biking culture's about. We touched on that dynamic earlier with yourself and Monica. On the videos as well, like you say, about not necessarily being camera shy, but there is an element sometimes of the eye roll of, right, here he goes, we're gonna have to rein him back in a little bit. Is that the dynamic? It's you thinking, we'll do that, we'll do this, and then it's kind of like, Monica, let's get this all sorted. But it's the ideas side of you that just comes absolutely pouring out of you, whether it's clothing, whether it's accessories, whether it's, as you say, with the book, whether it's anything to do with any trip that you go on. It just fizzes out of you.
Yeah, Monica probably has to dial back 60% of stuff. Really? She's fine if I embarrass myself, but sometimes she gets to a point and she's like, no, you're going to make me look bad with this embarrassment. Because if there's one bad comment about Monica, that's it. She walks off into the sunset. She can't deal with the negativity. But for me, I don't know why. I don't care. So I'll do something. And Monica would be like, look, you're going to look like an idiot if we post this. So we're going to have to rein this back. For me, I just post anything. I don't mind if someone thinks I'm an idiot. It's not that I think they're wrong. You're probably right. And that's fine. But I just don't care, you know.
It's a great way to be, especially with your line of work. You have to be thick-skinned because, you know, for every 99 lovely comments, you're going to get the odd horrible one. And sometimes, like Monica, you know, it's hard to ignore those negative people because that sticks in your mind. But I think people love you because you're you, and I wouldn't ever change who you are. Be as silly as you can be.
The thing is as well, Freddie, there's a real interaction with it because, as I said before, about whether it's Instagram or whether it's YouTube, there's an active engagement from yourself with regards to people that take the time to ask questions. And it shows how much I sit and watch YouTube. But if people are looking for where you got a particular thing, and obviously you do all the links and in the description, but you do go out of your way to help and engage in what people are after. And I think that overriding sense of with what social media and online content is, if you don't like it, fine. I love the comfort that you feel in that. If you like it, fine, go and do something else. You're here for that good time. I've got other things to crack on with, other wonderful things to crack on with. So that's your kind of way of approaching it. And this is my way of approaching it. That seems to be your MO.
And I'm a big believer in our happiness. We are in charge of it. Mm-hmm. Monica's not in charge. My family, my friends, they're not in charge of my happiness. Only I'm in charge of my happiness. It's up to me how I react to some negativity. It's up to me if I wake up in the morning, I'm happy. I'm in charge of it. So it's up to me to change it. If I'm not happy with something, I need to go out and change it. I need to quit my job. I need to, if I'm about to go bankrupt, sell my vehicle. I need to head off to a desert island, be by myself for 3 months. Mm-hmm. If that's what it means, I need to sell my house, sell everything. It's up to me to make myself happy. I'm not going to rely on anyone else. And so long as I'm in charge of my happiness, any other negativity, that's absolutely fine. There's no issue if people think I'm an idiot. There's no issue at all. They're welcome to think that. And I think you're probably right. But it's up to me if I'm happy. And I choose to be happy.
I love you. You've actually cheered me up a lot today, Freddie. I genuinely just love your wholesome innocence to the way you live your life. I absolutely love it. You mentioned the word happy a lot there. Come on, tell us what is in your garage at the moment in terms of bikes. We know the Bonneville. What, have you got anything else in your collection? What is making you happy?
Straight after this, the second after I finish this, I'm off to pick up a Suzuki GSX 8TT, which is like the Suzuki retro bike. Mm-hmm. I saw this at a show recently. It's a really nice, cool looking bike. There's a dealership at Orwell's. I'm off to pick it up. I've got it for 2 days. I'll bring it back here. But right now, all I've got, Bonneville here, mm-hmm. Wrangler out there with half of the bike ramp going on. And that's it. But I also want to buy a 1980s dirt bike on top of that. But usually I've got a couple of bikes in here.
This chat's just giving me a big smile, isn't it? It's all the feels today, Ewan. I'm absolutely on board with what you're saying there. And Freddie's just been the most wonderful guest. Given what you've done, given how your working life, I say that in inverted commas because you can tell it's just a joy for you. How far ahead are you planning? What projects do you have coming up? Do you need to get ahead of the curve with regards to new bike releases, the bike shows that take place around the country? Like I said, before myself and Ewan were at Motorcycle Live, I watched your YouTube walk around. It was great because you get that, you're walking around talking to camera and you get people in the background going, oh, Freddie's up there, but like having a little look and just kind of really holding court with what you're doing. And again, walking through and enjoying it with other people. How much of that is pre-planned? I suppose you've got to get your head around when these occasions are. And is there a real structure to your year? Is there a bit more seat of your pants type stuff?
No structure at all. So for example,
I don't know why I asked you, Ben, because given what you've said so far, yeah, that's probably a daft question.
we don't structure at all. So I filmed a video yesterday with a 1969 Alfa Romeo in the Suffolk countryside. That will come out tomorrow. And that's it. The Suzuki that I pick up today, that video will come out Sunday. We don't build up loads of videos or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Nothing's planned more than probably a day and a half in advance or something like that. So every video you see, unless it's a trip to Morocco where I film one video a day for a week, every video mm-hmm. you see will be within a week of reality of what's actually happening. We never have a library of stuff going on. It's literally as it happens.
A fast turnaround then.
Yeah, it is. Do you know what? We're really lucky because I don't know how to edit. I can't edit a video. I do all the filming. I then save it to Dropbox, give it to Monica. She edits it. So we actually do two videos a week on YouTube and one podcast a week as well on YouTube. So it's actually three videos a week.
The podcast is fantastic, Freddie. I love it. I really do.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That's a nice opportunity for me to chat to people and just, in essence, just do what I love. So I'm on Google or something like that, going on to Facebook Marketplace, looking at bikes I like. And again, you disguise that and pretend it's work. I mean, it's just a joy. You know, I'm just sitting here like talking to you now and talking about bikes and like, oh, look at this Ducati for £2,000. Someone go and buy that. No one listens to me, but you know, I just I love it. So we never plan anything in advance. Mm. And I like it like that because it keeps it more exciting and spontaneous. You know, it means that I don't just have to do bike review or car or something else. I just mix it up and I just basically film my life. I love cars and motorbikes and travel. Mm. And sometimes I'm sick of talking about motorbikes. So great, I'll get the Jeep out. And sometimes yada, yada, yada. I just want to go for a coffee and I'll go for a coffee. I'll talk about gear. Yeah, it keeps it fresh. And for me, I just do what I like to do.
Just a logistical one, and we've had so many wonderful guests on here. And
you have, can I say, I'm a massive fan. I watch all of your stuff. I love it.
That's very kind, Freddie. Just from a logistical point of view, when you are solo motorcycle tripping, and again it's a credit to the skills of how it's put together and how it's filmed. But you know the big kind of glorious landscape shot where you're the solo motorcyclist riding through over the hill and out of past the horizon. When you're filming that on your own, do you have to ride through, find the shot, ride back, film the shot, turn around, come back, pick the camera up and go again? Because it's a very boring logistical question, but you're kind of going, so does that then mean that your trip lasts longer than it would do if you were just riding it first time and straight off?
Yeah, you're bang on. You're bang on, David. It's exactly that. A trip takes twice as long, genuinely, because you set up a tripod. Mm-hmm. It's 2 minutes to get the tripod out, set it up. You then ride off into the distance and then you ride back. And sometimes it's 20 minutes just to get a 10-second clip. Yeah, it's double the length of journey to do it. But I love those. For me, they're my favorite shots.
Yeah.
The ride-by shots where you're going past. I really like that kind of thing, because I don't know why, but I never actually talk while I'm on the bike. So I have to do these kind of ride-by shots.
You don't, do you? No, because the soundtracks themselves are beautiful as well, because there's a real feel and a nuance to it. And I presume it's done completely intentionally, because the bit in between, the riding in between, say, you stopping and discussing whatever the topic of the day is, or whatever the bike is that you're on, or wherever you are sampling, whatever, maybe a coffee shop, etc. The bit in between with the riding of the bike with the music and the soundtrack, it's almost something that you get lost in. I mean, it might be hard for you to judge as objectively, but it's the kind of thing that you can hear and it just relaxes you. Is that what the kind of purpose for that is? Because you could be riding through London, you could be riding around Suffolk, and it's just nice and chilled and relaxed in between these great nuggets of information.
I really appreciate it. I think a lot of it is because I grew up loving cars. When I'm watching, for example, Top Gear or something like that, I've always liked seeing someone's face when they're talking, because I feel more connected to seeing it when you see the face. And the only problem with, and I do like it, I watch loads of channels where people talk on the bike. I love it. And I may even start doing it in the future myself. But I've never got into it from doing it myself, only because I really like seeing someone's face as they're talking to you. And when you've got your visor down, you just can't see the face. Mm. You lose a little bit of the personal contact. And that's initially why we started it. And so it doesn't get too boring. Monica puts the music on over the top because I'm not speaking. But look, maybe I'll do it in the future. Maybe I will, because a lot of people say, you know, at least do a bit of talking while riding. I'll be honest, it's just laziness from technology point of view. How do I set it up? I actually don't know how to set it up. It can't be that difficult, but I don't know.
Right. You talk about riding. Talk us about a fantasy ride if you can. Unfortunately, this is going to be the final question because this has flown by. We've loved chatting to you, but we'd love to ask you to tell us your most idyllic fantasy ride. So imagine you could be riding anywhere in the world. What bike would you be riding on? I know who you'd be riding with. You better say the right answer. Who would you take with you? And would there be a sound check? So would you be listening to music? So your perfect road, your perfect bike, your perfect passenger.
That's such a good question. I love it. I thought you were going to ask this because I watched this. Yes. Okay. So bike, it has to be the Bonneville.
It has to
be the Bonneville. I know if I could pick any bike in the world, for example, my two probable dream bikes, Triumph T120 and Norton Commando. I love those bikes. But this is my emotional attachment bike. There is no bike I'd rather do it on. So that's the bike. The music, Post Malone right now. I'm addicted to Post Malone. So that's on in the background. And who am I doing it with? I'm doing it solo, just me. Ooh. Yeah, 100%, 100%. I love group trips and everything like that. No way I'd do it with Monica. Monica would absolutely hate it. She'd be on the back complaining and she'd have no interest in it at all. And she would ruin my enjoyment of it. I'm going solo by myself.
Well, you might be going solo in life when she sees this, but yeah.
Yeah, no, honestly, I like group rides as well. Mm. There's nothing like a bit of solo riding as well. It's just pure meditation. I really, really like it. And there are pros and cons, of course. But, you know, if you're solo riding, I don't know where I'm going to wake up in the morning. Mm. I don't know what country I'm waking up in the morning. I can sleep until however I want. I can stop for a coffee in a little cafe, wherever I want. I don't have to worry about anyone else but myself. It's so selfish, and I love that.
And is there a destination? I mean, given where you've been and what you've kind of enjoyed, are you going somewhere that's warm? I mean, again, just to get bang up to date with your content, riding through Morocco in that group ride when you had that awful, was it 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours maybe in the afternoon, were you trying to work out whether it was altitude sickness or motion sickness? So I presume you're going to stay away from someone that's either too high or not enough oxygen.
Yeah, I actually got ripped to pieces online for that.
Because
I think I portrayed the group tour company in a bad light.
Freddie, sorry to butter, but you watch it, and I did watch the whole thing. This is me fanboying now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the internet is it's extreme reactions. Normal people are watching that going, oh, well, that's a terrible tour then. It's like, no, it's just an individual on a big bike tour. Like one of the fellas stacked it off his bike, didn't he? I mean, that doesn't mean to say that the bike tour's terrible. It's just what happens to an individual.
Exactly that. And I wouldn't usually address this stuff, but the bike tour company were worried I'm putting them in a bad light. So they said, Freddie, could you just mention this, and this? So I said, of course, look, I get along brilliant with them. I'm more than happy to do it. If it were just me, I wouldn't mind, but because it's me potentially badly representing a company, I'm like, look, of course, I don't want to put you in a spot. Like, I'll say whatever you want me to say because it's an excellent tour, but I got ripped to pieces for that. But with the tour, or with me, my dream trip, Post Malone, Bonneville, solo, ride to India. That's what I want to do.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. We've had other people said India before, actually. It seems quite, I think you're going to get all the senses, aren't you, in your drive, riding through India. It's going to be magical.
Oh, you, and you get everything there. It's a road tripping dream, India. Yeah, it really is. It's incredible. And the places that you have to ride through to actually get to India as well. I mean, that would be the trip of a lifetime. I really want to do a colossal epic of a trip, and that would be top of my list.
And just to, I mean, you've absolutely nailed that answer, Freddie. It's been wonderful to hear. But you're... Just to round us off, a word of advice for people that may have a bit of trepidation. I mean, you approach the world and life in such a wonderful way, but anyone that may have a bit of trepidation of getting the bike and either pointing it east or west and thinking, let's see where we end up, is it just jump in and put yourself there with bells on and enjoy it?
Don't overthink it and don't worry about being sensible. That's it. Just go out there and live your dream. You don't need to worry about it. And the dream doesn't have to be going out and getting an incredible bike. The dream is your personal dream. You can get a bike for £800. You can wild camp so it doesn't cost much. Like, we're not talking millionaires' dreams. Just anyone can be completely free. You know, you just have to do it within your means. Like, I don't have a 15K bike because I freak out with overheads, for example. I love the freedom of not having overheads. That's why I've got a dirt cheap bike. Anyone can do it. Just get out there. Don't overthink it and live the dream.
That's absolutely, it's been such a joy. But sadly, Ewan and Freddie, that's about it for this week's Full Chat powered by Bikeshaw. As the UK's largest independent motor and cycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and so much more.
Well, you heard it there. Live the dream. And honestly, you have been a dream. What an episode. A massive thank you to our special guest, Freddie Dobbs. Loved it.
Thank you both. It's been my pleasure being on. I'm huge fans of all of this, so thank you both.
Freddie, you're a delight. It's been an absolute pleasure. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, from Dave and myself, a massive thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.